Canto 6, Chapter 16. King Chitraketu meets the Supreme Lord. The son of Vyasa said, "The Devarishi, O king, thereupon brought the deceased son of the king before the mind's eye of the lamenting relatives and addressed him. Sri Narada said, "O living soul, all good fortune to you, behold your mother, father, friends and relatives who, lamenting over you, are greatly distressed. To complete your life, you may return to your body and enjoy your life in the midst of your kin, while accepting the royal throne your father gave to you." The individual soul said, "In which of all those births wherein I, because of my karma, have been wandering among the gods, the animals and the human beings, were these people here my father and mother? In the course of time, eventually all people become each other's friends, family members, enemies, neuters, well-wishers, indifferent or envious ones. Just as means of exchange, like gold, pass from one person to the other, the same way the individual soul passes through different species of life by different fathers. One always sees that the ties one has in human society with matters like money or the other sex are temporary. One claims ownership for as long as one relates to it. So too, the eternal individual soul identifies itself in a certain birth with a body for as long as that soul is situated in it, even though the soul actually has no specific material identity. This living entity is factually eternal, imperishable, and most subtle. It constitutes the self-effulgence of all the different embodiments, the master who manifests himself as this material world by means of the gunas. It is not of like and dislike, or of mine and thine. It is the one witness to the different sorts of intelligence and performance of good and bad deeds. The original soul is not of the happiness and harm resulting from fruitful actions. Perfectly neutral, residing in the heart, he is the Lord overseeing cause and effect." The son of Vyasa continued, "Thus having spoken, that living soul went away. His relatives, astonished about what he had said, then cut the bond of their affection for him and gave up their lamentation." The difficult to forsake affection that leads to lamentation, illusion, fear and distress was by the family of the son given up when they, with the performance of the proper rites, removed the body. O King Parikshit, those who had killed the child were, bereft of their bodily lustre, very ashamed of having murdered the boy. Remembering what the Brahmin Angira had stated, they performed, according to the directions of the priests, at the river the Yamuna, the atonement for having killed the baby. Chitraketu, spiritually awakened by the words of the two Brahmin souls, thus emerged liberated from the dark well of his familial attachment, the way an elephant emerges from a mud pool. After taking a bath in the Yamuna, as was prescribed, and after piously performing oblations of water while controlling his mind and senses with gravity, he offered the two sons of Brahma his obeisances. Bhagavan Narada, was very pleased with him, being such a surrendered devotee in control of himself, next, as he had promised, disclosed the following knowledge of the Lord in the form of a prayer. "O my Lord, my obeisances unto you, the Supreme Lord of Vasudeva. Let me meditate on Pradyumna, Aniruddha, and Sankarsana. All my respects for the full manifestation of wisdom, the embodiment of supreme bliss, the self of delight and peace, because of whom one turns one's vision away from the dual world. The waves of the material ocean calm down by the realization of your personal bliss. my reverence for the supreme controller of the senses, my respects for you, whose expansions are unlimited. May he, the one without a second, who, being completely spiritual, cannot be expressed in words, be caught in a form, or be comprehended by the mind, may he, who is transcendental to cause and effect, protect us. The way all pottery is created from earth, consists of earth, and returns to earth, everything is born from him, exists by him, and vanishes in him. Him, the Supreme Brahman, the Absolute Truth, I offer my obeisances. I bow before him who, as vast as the sky, has expanded outside and inside, and who, by the mind, the intelligence, the senses, and the life airs, cannot be touched or known. The body, the senses, the life air, the mind and intelligence are all parts that are penetrated by the supporting, connecting and ruling principle of Brahman. These parts, just like iron that cannot be forged if it is not heated, cannot engage in activities without that support and acquire, with that support, the status of an independent seer. My obeisances unto you, my Lord, O Supreme Personality, most perfect Supersoul and Master of all mystic powers, whose feet are embraced and caressed by the multitude of lotus-bird hands of the topmost devotees. All my respects for you who are situated in the highest position. Sri Shuka said, after Narada had imparted the knowledge to this fully surrendered devotee, he together with Angira left for the abode of Brahma, O King. Chitraketu then chanted with great concentration and drinking water only for 1 week the prayer that was communicated by Narada. Strictly keeping to the instructions, he, after these 7 days and nights, by holding on to that prayer, achieved the mastery of the Vidyadharas, the ones founded on knowledge, O ruler of men. By that spiritual exercise for his mind, having found the enlightened course, he in a few days only thereupon reached the shelter of the lotus feet of the god of all gods, Lord Shesha, Anantadeva or Sankarsana. He saw his master and controller, with his smiling lotus face, reddish eyes and skin as fair as a white lotus. Clad in blue silk and with a glittering helmet, armlets, a belt and bangles, he was situated in the midst of his most perfect devotees. The sight of him wiped out all his sins so that he, contented and pure at heart, could approach him like a full-blown bhakta. Moved from within by love, he, with tears in his eyes and his hairs standing on end, offered the original personality of God his obeisances. At the lotus feet of the Lord of the Verses, he wetted that resting place with his teardrops over and over, and was, because his voice was choked by his love, for a long time unable to utter a single letter of the alphabet and offer prayers. By intelligently controlling his mind and senses, led by the external world, this king thereupon recovered his speech and addressed the personification of devotional service and the scriptures, the teacher of all. Chitraketu said, O unconquerable one, you are conquered by those who are of self-control. You give yourself in utter compassion to those devotees who, as surrendered souls conquered by you, always sing your glories with minds free from desire. With a false notion of independence, the creators of this universe, who are only a part of a part of you, in vain compete with each other for your dominion that consists of the creation, maintenance and dissolution of this cosmic manifestation, O Supreme Lord. Without yourself having a beginning, an in-between or an end, you have your existence, from the smallest material unit to the complete of the universal manifestation, in the beginning, in the end and in-between. That what is constant in the beginning and in the end is there also in the middle of the existence of all. This egg-shaped universe, consisting of the 7 layers of the earth element and the rest, each of which measures the tenfold of the preceding one, is but insignificant compared to the billions of similar universes that exist in the cosmos. Therefore, you are called unlimited. Eager to enjoy like animals, O Lord, man worships only parts of you, the demigods, and not the supreme of you. The benedictions they bring are finished at the end of their term, just as it is with politicians. A mind ruled by lust, the lesser god, just like fried seed, does not lead to growth and healing in you, O Supreme One. But in the full knowledge of your Supreme Self, a person is not affected by the networks of duality of the material qualities. They who on the path of liberation are of worship were conquered by you, O Unconquerable One, when you, as their teacher, spoke about the process of devotional service. They are the faultless souls who do not crave for material happiness. They are the great sages satisfied from within. Engaged a different way, as in demigod worship, one lacks in consciousness and arrives in human society, thus at the I and mine and the me and you of the false ego. In approaches other than yours, one is, as a result of the deviating vision, impure in one's conduct, time-bound, and full of adharma. In what sense is it beneficial for oneself, for others, or for whatever purpose, to be turned against oneself, one's own body, or against others in one's religiosity? Such a practice of human self-betrayal raises your anger, torments one's fellow man, and contravenes the Dharma. Your view, defining the process of devotional service, is free from inconsistencies. When one, following that course, is equal towards all living beings, whether they move or not move, one is certainly a civilized person. This absence of internal conflict in you, O my Lord, puts an end to the sins of anyone who sees you, your devotees and your book before his eyes. But once hearing your name, forthwith delivers even the lowest among men from the misery of material existence. Seeing you now here before us, O Supreme Lord, has removed the contaminations from our mind. And why would it be different from what the great Rishi of Enlightenment, Narada, your devotee, has said? O Unlimited One, you as the Supersoul of all the world know everything done by each living entity out here. What we know compares to the light of fireflies relative to the Son of you as our teacher of transcendence. All obeisances unto you, O Lord of the continued existence, the ending and creation of the universe. The position of you as the transcendental swan, the ascetic of the highest order, is beyond the ken of those who unify in a false notion, a material notion of independence. The senses gathering knowledge perceive in pursuance of your perception, and they who endeavor to rule the universe do so to the example of your endeavoring. Let there be my obeisances unto you, the Supreme Lord with the thousands of hoods, by whom the gigantic universe you carry on a single hood appears as insignificant as a mustard seed. Sri Shukadeva said, O best of the Kurus, the Supreme Lord Ananta Deva, thus being worshipped, most pleased about Chitraketu, the king of the Vidyadharas, thereupon replied. The Supreme Lord said, from directly seeing me and from the worship with the prayer disclosed to you by Narada and Angira, you now have attained perfection, O King. I, the cause and soul of all beings, having expanded as all beings, exist in my two continuous forms of the spiritual sound vibrations and the Supreme Brahman. The living entity expanded into the world, and the world expanded within the living entity. These two, the world and the living entity, are created and pervaded by me. A person asleep sees in his dream the entire world within himself, but upon awaking, he finds himself lying down somewhere. The different states of consciousness and conditions of life of the living entities one must likewise consider as manifestations of the Maya or dreaming potency of the original self, knowing which one should always remember their supreme creator and witness. Know me as that all-pervading soul, the supreme spirit free from the modes of matter, by dint of whom the sleeping, bewildered person then may acquire insight in what belongs to the dream and what to his happiness. When the person manages to remember himself, his spirit soul, his jiva, as the connectedness of both the states of consciousness of being asleep and being awake, he may, beyond that spiritual knowledge, reach the supreme Brahman, the knowing principle that is transcendental. The living entity, having forgotten about this spiritual nature of my position, leads, because of that, a materially conditioned life in separation from the supersoul, as a consequence of which it wanders from one body to the next, from one death to another. Achieving in this world a human birth offers one the chance to arrive at self-realization with the support of this spiritual knowledge and wisdom. But they who fail to acquire that knowledge will never find peace and happiness. Thinking of the trouble of toiling in this world and then achieving the opposite of what was intended, and then remembering how one is free from fear being disinclined, one should, thus knowing better, desist from such karmic desire. Husband and wife, being materially motivated, perform activities for the sake of their happiness and to be free from misery. But they neither end their distress nor achieve happiness. Those who consider themselves very smart, but this way attain the opposite of what they wanted, find it extremely difficult to understand what it means to be of progress with the soul and what it means to exist in Turiya, in the meditative state, apart from the three states of sleep, of waking and unconsciousness. Someone who by his own experience and power of understanding, or by the process of listening to others, is freed from the allurement of the material world, may, fully satisfied by that knowledge and wisdom, then become my devotee. The realization of the insight of this qualitative notion of the oneness of the individual soul and the transcendence of the quantitative Lord constitutes, all things considered, the ultimate goal of life for capable and intelligent human beings who unite in Bhakti Yoga. If you, with faith, not concluding differently, accept these words of mine, O King, you will soon find your perfection in full awareness of the spiritual knowledge and its wisdom, its practical application. Sri Shuka said, after the Supreme Lord, the teacher of the universe, thus had encouraged Chitraketu, he, Lord Hari, the soul of all, disappeared from sight.